Thank you, Mr. Hall. Well, we are quickly approaching that time of year again, are we not? You know, it's going to be just a few weeks away before the construction workers are going to be blocking off Watson Boulevard from the base out to the mall while they put up their the fancy Christmas lights. We're going to see that billboard every year. It shows up near the base that actually says, "Put Christ back in Christmas." And in fact, Tracy had one this week where she had to turn down a Christmas party, and then they were insisting that she would be part of the Secret Santa. And so now they know at work that she doesn't keep Christmas because she rejected the invitation to the Secret Santa. And then one of my boys this week, or actually it was, I think it was last week, came home to me and says, "Hey, Dad, I had this discussion with Nathan about, you know, Christmas." And we were discussing, is Christmas biblical? And his friend said, "Hey, go to Luke 2. And besides, we give gifts because the three wise men brought gold, silver, and platinum to Jesus Christ." No, those weren't the gifts, but, you know, young kids. Anyway, I believe we all in here know about Christmas. We've been reviewing it year after year after year. But based on that little conversation that my son had, I think it was probably a good idea to review, was Christ born on December 25th? I mean, that's what's pivotal about it. That is the center point of the Christmas celebration, whether you're atheist, religious, or not. So today, let's start with the account of Christ's birth in Luke 2. And let's just go through and read it. Luke 2 and verse 1. "And it came to pass in those days that a decree went out from Caesar Augusta that all the world should be registered." And down in verse 4, "Joseph also went up from Galilee out of the city of Nazareth into Judea to the city of David, which is called Bethlehem, because he was the house and lineage of David. And in verse 5, "to be registered with Mary, his betrothed wife, who was with child. So it was that while they were there, the days were completed for her to be delivered. And she brought forth her firstborn son and wrapped him in swaddling clothes and laid him in the manger because there was no room at the inn." And in verse 8, "And it came to pass, and now there were in the same country shepherds living in the field, living out in the field, keeping watch over their flocks by night. And behold, an angel of the Lord stood before them, and the glory of the Lord shone around them, and they were greatly afraid." And verse 10, "Then the angel said to them, 'Do not be afraid, for behold, I bring you good tidings of great joy, which will be to all people. For there is born to you this day in the city of David a Savior, who is Christ the Lord.'" Now let's jump down to verse 15. "So it was when the angel had gone away from them into heaven that the shepherds said to one another, 'Let us go to Bethlehem and see this thing that has come to pass, which the Lord has made known to us.' And they came with haste and found Mary and Joseph and the babe lying in the manger." And verse 20, verse 19. "But Mary kept all these things and pondered them in her heart." In verse 20, "And the shepherds returned, glorifying and praising God for all the things that they had heard and seen, and it was told to them." And in verse 21, "And when 8 days were completed for the circumcision of the child, the name was called Jesus, and the name given by the angel before he was conceived in the womb." Simple story. Fantastic story. Without that event, we wouldn't be here today. We would not have our Passover Jesus Christ. So yes, it is very pivotal. But the key is, there is not one mention of when he was born. Now you can actually, and we're going to go through a couple of the clues, but there is not one definite reference that he was born on December 25th, August 3rd, June 5th, any of those days. We From that story alone, we just don't know. But there, like I said, there are some clues that we can actually glean from this story to get a rough idea on when he was born. And the first one was in verse 8. Now there were in the same country shepherds living out in the field, keeping watch over the flocks by night. Turns out that actually is a very, very crucial piece of information. But I must caution everyone in here when you actually use this to convince yourself, because the argument I've heard since I've been growing up as a child was that, well, it couldn't have been Christmas, couldn't have been December 25th, because it was too cold for the sheep. That's hogwash. That is 100% completely wrong. Because you know what? What I did first, by the way, I have my nifty little cell phone. On here, I have my weather app. And I did go and I found out what the temperature was or is going to be in Jerusalem on December 25th. And you know what it is on average? High 30s, low 40s. Like middle Georgia. Now, I also hunt. And I can tell you, when do the animals move? They move when it's cold. When you're cold, what do? You put on a wool sweater. What do the sheep wear? Wool. And then they had fire. Temperature in Jerusalem on December 25th, or whatever time of the year this was, had absolutely zero to do with that verse 8. What it had to do with, and this is what is significant about it, is according to the Companion Bible, Appendix 179 and section 2, the Companion Bible says that it was most likely that the pasturage, there was likely little pasturage in the open fields in December. They would not have been in the field because of the lack of grazing food and not the cold. Now, I'm not a shepherd, and I have never raised a cow or a sheep or any sort of domestic animal of that sort, but I do watch documentaries. And you know the goat herders up in the Himalayas? They move them from pasture land to pasture land to pasture land. It hasn't to do with the temperature. It has to do with food. So what was significant about that? By December 25th, there was no food. And in fact, in that same section that I read to you, it mentioned that the herders, the sheep herders, started moving their animals inside somewhere in the late October, November time frame, and it had to do with grazing food. That is it. So, based on that, it happened before mid-October. Now, the next thing we can glean from here is in verse 1. Now it came to pass, we will reread that, and it came to pass in those days that a decree went out from Caesar Augusta that all the world would be registered. Have you been seeing the signs recently about the 2020 census? Yeah, just have time left. There's still time to register for the 2020 census. Do you know why they do the census? They want to know what the tax base is going to be. It's just not wanting to do it just some random count. They wanted to know what the Romans wanted to know what to expect from taxes from the Jerusalem or from Israel at that time. Now, it was taxes are always unpleasant, just like death. They're all unpleasant. The Romans weren't stupid, though. They knew there were two times in the year, one in particular, when the Jews in Israel all got together. When was that? Feast of Tabernacles. And according to the information that I found out, Jerusalem swelled from 120,000 approximately to in excess of 1.5 million people during Jerusalem. So why fight the crowds? Why fight it? They're going to be there anyway. So why not make it easy for yourself? So that's why it was done. That's why that verse is significant. And that's why everybody was there in Jerusalem at that time. And you know, the other one, and probably the most convincing or the most important argument on when Christ was born, if you want to be able to pin it down, has to do in Luke 1. So let's just go back to Luke 1. And we'll read verse 5. There in the days of Herod, the king of Judea, a certain priest named Zacharias of the division of Abijah, his wife was of the daughters of Aaron, and her name was Elizabeth. And they were both righteous before God, walking in all the commandments and ordinances of the Lord blameless. But they had no children because Elizabeth was barren, and they were both well advanced in years. So it was, while he was serving as the priest before God, in the order of his division, according to the custom of the priesthood, his lot fell to burn incense. And here we'll jump down to verse 11. Then an angel of the Lord appeared to him, Zacharias, standing on the right side of the altar of incense. Then Zacharias saw him. And in verse 13, do not be afraid, Zacharias, for your prayer is heard. And your wife, Elizabeth, will bear you a son, and you shall call him John. The key is, when was John the Baptist conceived? That's where the key is. And so we'll jump down to verse 24. Now after those days, his wife, after he finished his order, his job, he went home, and after those days, his wife Elizabeth conceived. And she hid herself 5 months, saying, thus the Lord has dealt with me in the days while when he looked on me to take away my reproach among people. And in verse 26 down through 35, it's where the angel went to Mary and said, you're a virgin, you're going to give birth to Jesus Christ. And we'll jump and read verse 36. Now indeed, Elizabeth, your relative, this is the angel talking to Mary, now indeed, Elizabeth, your relative, has also conceived a son in her old age, and this is now her sixth month. For her who was called barren. And then in verse 38, then Mary said, behold, the maidservant of the Lord, let it be to me according to your word. And the angel departed from her. So there's an overview of the story. John the Baptist was conceived 6 months prior to Jesus Christ. The key is, when did Zacharias serve in the temple? Well, thank you to the Companion Bible, appendix number 179, section 3, and the Jews. They kept very, very good records on when each order was serving. And at that time of the year, in like 483 to 4 AD, the order of Abijah actually served, which meant Zacharias, served in the temple around mid-June, until he got home, that means Elizabeth conceived late June, early July. 9 months from there, you do the math, that means John the Baptist was born somewhere in March and April, which, voila, was around Passover. That meant, again, you can do the backwards math. We can do it on, if I had a chalkboard, I would do it. But if you do the backwards math, that means Jesus Christ was conceived of the Holy Spirit in the December, early January time frame, which also meant 9 months from then would have been September. What takes place in September? Feast of Tabernacles, Day of Atonement, and Feast of Trumpets, right in that area. Now, in my handy-dandy companion Bible, I brought it. I was going to quote from it, but I won't. I'll just show it. They actually make reference to the fact, and I think it's fairly significant, that that year, the first day of the Feast of Tabernacles took place on what is equivalent to our September 29th. So they are suggesting, and I like the suggestion personally, even though there's no proof, Christ would have been born on September 29th, and 8 days later for his circumcision would have taken place on the eighth day or the last great day. How significant is that? That's just kind of amazing, kind of a coincidence. So I like that one. Okay, but there still is really absolutely no proof on exactly what day. We just know one thing. He was not born in the winter. He was born in the fall sometime. Sometime in September. Now that begs the question. If he was not born on December 25th, where on earth did this December 25th come from? How did it get linked to the birth of Jesus Christ? Well, there's a long debate on this from the research I've done. But the bottom line is December 25th, which turns out to be the winter solstice, religious celebrations, and the winter solstice, for those who are not familiar, it's the shortest day of the year, have been celebrated since way, way, way back. The god Horus in Egypt was traditionally believed to be born on December 25th, or on the winter solstice. And according to, I'd like to read a passage to you from what a passage I found from EncyclopediaBritannica.com. And they say, the precise origin of assigning December 25th as the birth date of Jesus is unclear. The New Testament provides no clues in this regard. December 25th was first identified as the date of Jesus' birth by Sextus Julius Africanus in 221 AD and later became universally accepted. One widespread explanation of the origin of this date was that the Christianizing of the Dies Solis Invictus, which is Day of the Birth of the Unconquering Sun, S-U-N, a popular holiday in the Roman Empire, that celebrated the winter solstice as a symbol of the resurgence of the sun, casting away winter and the heralding of the rebirth of spring and summer. Indeed, after December 25th had become widely accepted as the date of Jesus' birth, Christian writers frequently made the connection between the rebirth of the sun, S-U-N, and the birth of the sun, S-O-N. One of the difficulties which this view is that it suggests a nonchalant willingness on the part of Christian church to appropriate a pagan festival when the early church was so intent on distinguishing itself categorically from pagan beliefs and practices. Now, we know they made the transition somewhere, sometime, and from all the other readings, Sunday worship, Easter worship, all the transitions from pagan to Christian took place around 200 BC or 200 AD. Now, one last thing. The second view suggests that December 25th came because Jesus' birth was priori reasoning for suggesting the spring equinox. And the spring equinox is when the sun and the light are equal. As the date of the creation of the world and the fourth day of creation when the light was created, or as the day of Christ's conception. And they suggest March 25th, 9 months later, December 25th. Either way, either option you like, December 25th, tying Christ's birth to December 25th, is tied to the sun and sun worship. Now, the bottom line is, there are numerous arguments that I also found out there that, oh yeah, we as a Catholic Church did not this did not come from pagan worship. But the truth of the matter is, there are so many other symbols that are associated with the Catholic, with Christmas that can be clearly drawn back to pagan worship. So now the question comes, does it matter? Does it really matter? That's always a major question. So to answer that question, I'd like to turn to Deuteronomy. And let's go to Deuteronomy chapter 12. And we'll read verse 3 through 5. And you shall destroy their altars, break their sacred pillars, and burn the wooden images with fire. You shall cut down the carved images of their gods and destroy their names of their place. You shall not worship the Lord your God with such things, but you shall seek the place where the Lord your God chooses. Oh boy, that sounds like the Feast of Tabernacles, doesn't it? Out of all of your tribes, and put his name for his dwelling place, and there you shall go. And let's jump down to 29. When the Lord your God cuts off from before you the nations which you go out to dispossess, and you displace them, and dwell them in their land, take heed to yourselves that you are not ensnared to follow them after they are destroyed before them, before you, and that you do not inquire after their gods, saying, how did these nations serve their God? I will do likewise. You shall not worship the Lord your God in that way. For every abomination of the Lord which he hates, they have done to their gods, for they burn even their sons and daughters in the fire to their gods. Whatever I command you, be careful to observe it. You shall not add to it, nor take away from it. So again, I ask the question, does it matter? And the answer is absolutely yes.